The first accelerometer that we consider is the so-called moving mass accelerometer. It is mounted directly onto the object of which we want to measure the acceleration, and it consists basically of a mobile mass that is not fixed but can move accordingly to the acceleration of the object under measurement, and is connected in one side to a spring and in the other side to a damping piston that will stop the oscillation. The mass, in fact, will oscillate due to the acceleration of the object that is moving. To have a clear idea of the physical phenomenon, we can imagine the situation that happens when we are on board into a car. When we start the car, our body will be pushed against the seat. Instead, when the car will stop, or when suddenly we brake the vehicle, our body will move forward. This clearly demonstrates that the acceleration of the body internally contained, internally located into the car, will be directed into an opposite direction of the car itself. This is the same that happens in the transducer that we are considering, where the mass plays the role of the driver into a car, and the object itself, the transducer itself, is, let's say, the car. So the transducer will be subject to the same acceleration of the object under measurement, but the mass will feature an acceleration in the opposite direction. Let's call x, uppercase, the entity of the displacement relative to the object that contains the accelerometer, and let's call x, lowercase, the displacement of the object itself with respect to a fixed reference point, let's say to the origin of the reference system to which we are evaluating the acceleration of the object. The first recipe that is shown in slide 30 expresses the value of such a kind of movement, into which we see that the force that we are considering, that in other case it is exerted due to the movement of the object, the force whose expression is the product of the mass times the acceleration, is equal to the product of the mass that multiply the second derivative of x lowercase plus the second derivative of x uppercase. In other words, we can say that the product that we are considering is the mass time the acceleration of the object plus the acceleration relative to the object on which the accelerometer is located, is mounted. On the other hand, this force must win those devices that act in opposition to the movement of the mass itself. Those devices are, as we have already said, the spring and the piston. The spring will exert a force that is regulated by the so-called Hooke law, so is the product of the relative displacement times the elastic constant K, while the piston will require a force that is given by the product of the friction coefficient gamma with the velocity of the body, of the mass, relative to the internal movement it exerts. So the expression is F equal to minus K times X, X uppercase I mean, minus gamma times the derivative of X uppercase. In other words, the movement develops a force, in part used to move the object, and in part used to move the mass inside to the object. This kind of a force will balance the forces that are in opposition to the movement, so the elastic force and of the spring and the friction due to the piston that is inside a container with oil. By making equal the two expressions, we obtain that ma is equal to minus m times the acceleration of the mass plus gamma times the velocity of the mass plus k times the displacement x of the mass itself. And again, this equation expresses very well the situation, that is, the force due to the acceleration of the object is subdivided in three components. The first is necessary, or is spent, let's say, to move the mass m, and the other two are spent to win the oppositions of the piston and of the spring. The minus sign will show that the movement of the mass is in the opposite direction with respect to the movement of the acceleration that characterizes the body, the object that we are measuring. By passing in the Laplace frequency domain, the equation becomes ma equal to minus ms squared plus gamma s plus k multiplied, all the terms within the brackets, time x, the relative displacement. And finally, we obtain the transfer function of such a kind of transducer, that is the ratio between the relative displacement divided by the acceleration equal to minus m divided by k per time 1 divided by 1 plus gamma on k time s plus m on k time s squared. This is a second rank equation in S, in the frequency of the phenomenon. This expression says to us that when S is equal to zero, the displacement is proportional to the acceleration of the object time the sensibility of the transducer, that is the ratio between the mass and the elastic constant. This is truly interesting characteristic of the transducer. When S is equal to zero, it means that we have overcome the transient phase of the physical phenomenon that generates the acceleration, and basically the acceleration tends to be uniform, to be constant. In these conditions, we can say that the gain of the accelerometer depends on the ratio between the mass and the elastic constant of the spring. This is the real sensibility of the transducer. And if we use bigger masses, that is, mobile objects characterized by higher weight, or if we will use springs with low elastic constants, we will have much more sensibility. That is, we will have much more response into the output of the transducer, even when the acceleration is very low. This is completely true and completely understandable, because if the opposition of the spring is poor, is low, it is clear that the movement of the mass will be favored. On the other hand, it is clear that the response with the bigger objects located inside the transducer will be more robust, more consistent. On the other hand, the equation of the second rank in S features, generally speaking, double pole solution that can be obtained by solving the equation that is written into the denominator when gamma is equal to zero. The solution will be will feature omega equal to the root square of the ratio between k and the mass. The frequency that is indicated by the square root corresponds to the so-called resonance frequency, at which the gain of the transfer function will become infinite. The information that this quantity gives to us is that the relationship between the gain and the band of the transducer is of inversely proportionality. In other words, the bigger the gain, the shorter the band, or vice versa. The larger the band of frequencies at which the transducer provides an answer, the smaller the entity of this answer, the smaller the entity of the gain. In fact, the sensibility is given by the ratio m on k and the amplitude of the band, the so-called bandwidth, is the ratio of k on m. The inverse exactly with respect to the sensibility. We said that this value can be obtained by setting the friction gamma to zero in the equation of the denominator in the transfer function of the transducer. That is, if we eliminate the term that linearly depends on the frequency. We said that the value of omega equal to the square root of k on m has been obtained by setting the friction coefficient gamma equal to zero in the second order equation in S present in the transfer function of the transducer itself. And this corresponds to the so-called resonance frequency of the transducer itself, the frequency at which the gain will become infinite. Generally speaking, this is not the case. The friction is present since the piston is really inserted into the transducer. So, the transfer function and its own diagram is the one shown in slide 41, in which we can observe an initial part of the diagram that is constant, then an overshooting, and then a diagram that diminishes with a slope that corresponds to minus 40 dB per decade. This means that the real interval of frequencies into which the usage of the transducer is safe is the one into which its own answer is constant. We have to avoid the part into which we feature, we observe the presence of the overshooting, and of course we have to avoid the part into which the gain diminishes with that slope. For two motivations, the overshoot should be avoided because the amplitude of the overshoot cannot be foreseen a priori because it depends on the mechanical characteristics of the transducer. So the elastic constant, the friction in the time change, and we cannot know a priori what is the amplitude of the overshoot, that is, what is the amplitude of the gain in that range of a frequency. Moreover, typically the engineer doesn't want to work into an area into which the gain is not stable. I'm talking about the range of frequencies into which the slope is minus 40 dB per decade. So the real interval into which the accelerometer can and must be used is the one before the overshooting, the one into which the gain is definitively stable. Luckily, this interval corresponds to most of the typical frequencies in the industrial processes into which we could have the need for measuring the accelerations that this kind of transducer is able to evaluate. We said that the output of the transducer is the x displacement of the mass relatively to the object, to the box that contains it. But to be honest, this is not the real output of the transducer, because we have already said that every transducer provides an electric magnitude that should be considered proportional or related to the physical magnitude that we want to measure. If we come back to the slide 30, we see how this displacement is evaluated. A TPL, a linear position transducer, is inserted into the envelope, into the box that contains spring, mass, and piston, and this transducer is devoted to the evaluation of the displacement that corresponds, as we have already said, to an oscillation, due in fact to the direction into which the external acceleration behaves. The internal mass will move forward and backward, that is, toward the left direction or toward the right direction, against the spring, in other words, or against the piston. So we need a transducer that is able to provide a measurement that gives to us the entity of the displacement, but also the direction into which this displacement takes place, with respect a steady position of the mass that is shown in the figure by that red dotted lines, corresponding to those instants into which the object under measurement is not moving. The best transducer that meet such a kind of constraints is clearly the differential linear transducer. In other words, though that device featuring a magnetic nucleus that was moving between a primary solenoidal circuit and two secondary solenoidal circuits, coupling with one of them depending on the direction of the movement. The quality of the signal provided by this transducer is very compliant with our device, with our accelerometer, since the steady position features that the magnetic nucleus is exactly in the middle of the transducer, in part in front to the first secondary set of coils, and in part in front with the second set of coils. Then, on the basis of the phase relationship of the output voltage with the power supply, we can understand not only the amount of the displacement, but also the direction into which this displacement has occurred. We remember that for such a kind of a transducer, the power supply was provided in alternate current, so the output of the transducer will depend on the entity of the displacement, but also on the sinusoidal waveform behavior. To eliminate this second dependence that is not useful to our measurement, we put after the transducer a rectifier that eliminates the sinusoidal waveform and provides a continuum signal with an amplitude that is proportional to the entity of the displacement itself. So we can say that apart the gain of the transducer and of the TPEL transducer, I mean, and of the rectifier, the previous expression into which the real sensibility of the accelerometer is given by the ratio of the mass with the elastic constant is kept fixed, is preserved, let's say. In slide 42, we have two diagrams that show in the first case, in the upper one, the gain of a transfer function, a general transfer function, whose characteristics are similar to those of the mobile mass accelerometer. While in the lower diagram, depending on the evolution on the behavior of the frequencies, the phase margin is shown. What it is interesting to notice is that the equation that is reported on the diagram exactly corresponds to the structure of the transfer function of the accelerometer, because to the denominator we have a constant term, a term that is linear, that depends linearly with the frequency, and on the frequency, and a term that depends on the square of the frequency itself. So you see that depending on different values of the constant parameter into the equation, in particular of the zeta value, we can have several curves with a behavior that is similar to a constant value and immediately corresponding to the resonance frequency, a diminishing line with a slope equal to 30 decibel per decade. Otherwise, we can have several examples of overshooting that can diverge to infinite depending on the fact that the zeta parameter could reach a value equal to zero. Generally speaking, the equation into the denominator of the transfer function features a complex conjugate poles. And here I open, let's say, a parenthesis, because when we will solve the exercises of the exams, we will see several processes that are characterized by transfer function, by gain functions that features such a kind of behavior, such a kind of poles. Talking about the control theory, it is not possible to compensate such a kind of poles, because these poles are characterized by a real part and an imaginary part. And of course, if it would be possible to identify a zero with the same real part, so able to compensate the pole, it is not possible to realize a zero term with the same imaginary part corresponding to the complex conjugate poles we have. So this prevents us from the compensation, and when we need such a kind of transfer function, the only solution that we can claim, that we can accept, is to work before those frequencies, before the resonance frequency, and in particular we could say very far from it, so as to be sure to avoid to fall in this area into which the gain of the transfer function is completely unpredictable and could be under control, like in the case of the blue curve, but completely also out of control, like in the case of all the other curves featuring the overshooting shape. Just to conclude, we have seen the use and the characteristics of an accelerometer, very affordable, that can work at low frequencies but also at medium-high frequencies. When I say frequencies, I mean the velocity with which the acceleration can change. If we want to go further to very high frequencies, we have to completely change the idea, the principle on which the transducer is based. And in this case, we will make usage of piezoelectric materials. Instead, if we want to measure accelerations at low frequencies in a very reliable way, we can introduce into the accelerometer the presence of a direct current control motor. This will create a control gain in the accelerometer and will realize, will carry out the so-called servo accelerometer, whose transfer function is constant within a good range of very slow phenomenon. This will be the content of the next lessons.